camera is a simple tool, and it can be constructed with basic materials. You could make it on a snow day with your child. All you need is cardboard, tape, and aluminum foil. But it's the eye behind the camera that draws a line between child's play and the potential for photography. This is Central Standard. I'm Laura Spencer. Coming up later in the hour, we'll delve into moving pictures and talk to one of the founders of the True False Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri. But first, a new exhibition at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art called Invented Worlds, photographs by Ruth Thorne Thompson. Photographer Ruth Thorne Thompson uses simple techniques like the pinhole camera to rethink photography. Our guest today to talk about her work is Senior Curator of Photography at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, Keith Davis. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I appreciate you braving the storm in the streets. And what's interesting is I've seen so many photographs over the last week as we've had a series of snowstorms. So it seems like photography is still very alive and well.
Well, even in, you know, the 21st century, we still depend on the lens-formed image for so much of our information. I mean, it's both a very old technology and still totally relevant.
Well, this exhibition is called Invented Worlds, and it just opened last week. So I know that maybe some people have had a chance to get over to the museum, but with the conditions, not everybody. But I wanted to start a little bit with Ruth Thorne Thompson's background. She was born in New York City and spent many years in Chicago. But she had an interesting career path before focusing on photography and teaching, including dance and journalism. Could you tell us a little bit about her background?
Well, it is an interesting background. Her first creative interest was in dance. She studied dance and actually worked with a professional troupe for a couple of years as a professional dancer. After doing that for a couple of years, she went back to graduate school in painting, went all the way through her graduate studies in painting, and then decided that it was really photography that was her primary interest, and then went through graduate studies in photography. So she has an extremely, unusual background in the fact that she studied very seriously these other disciplines, dance and painting, before coming to photography. And I'd like to think that those interests really inform her visual sensibility and how she, has approached the camera over all these years.
Well, she's worked extensively with a pinhole camera since the mid-1970s. And could you describe how a pinhole camera works and looks?
Well, the pinhole camera is kind of wonderful. It's both the most simple imaging technology or photographic technology imaginable, but it's also one of the weirdest. The pinhole camera sees in a way that we don't necessarily take for granted, or that is not natural to us. But basically, a pinhole camera can be made with the cheapest of materials. You know, you could make a pinhole camera without spending a nickel, really, just with household things. But you basically just make a small box of some kind that needs to be light tight. On one side of that box, you have a pinhole aperture, and that's literally an aperture made by punching a needle through, say, aluminum foil. In terms of a photographic lens, where we talk about a lens being f2 or f1.4 and so forth, the pinhole aperture is roughly f200 or f300. So it's a tiny opening. In the back of that little box that you make, you know, again, it could be a shoe box, could be an oatmeal box, whatever, you have some kind of light-sensitive surface, whether it's a sheet of film, traditional film, or even a sheet of photographic paper. And that surface receives the image cast by the pinhole, and then you develop either the film or paper, fix it, and then make prints from that negative.
So you're a curator at the Nelson, but you're also a photographer. Have you tried to build one of these pinhole cameras?
Yes. I mean, every undergraduate student, when I was an undergraduate student many years ago, we did work with pinhole cameras, and it was great fun. It does teach you about how the lens, quote-unquote, sees in a way that a normal camera doesn't, or it teaches another aspect of how the lens-formed image really, really works. The weird thing about the pinhole camera, of course, is that there's no depth of field. There's no single plane of focus. When we work with a normal camera, we place the plane of focus, you know, a foot in front of us or 20 feet in front of us or infinity. But there's no such focus control with the pinhole camera. Everything is equally rendered from a half inch in front of the pinhole to a mile out. And so that essentially kind of collapses space and allows for some very strange effects.
Well, you talked about Ruth Thorne Thompson and focusing in on the using the pinhole camera, but it seems like it's something that maybe it's at a certain stage as a photographer you experiment with it, but then maybe you move on to different cameras. Why was it? What was the appeal for this camera in her work, and how did she decide to continue using it?
Well, good question. I mean, as I said, nearly every undergraduate at some point uses a pinhole camera, but very few stick with it. Why did Ruth stick with it? Well, I think because it satisfied, obviously, something very important to her expressive interest. There's a wonderful primitive sensibility about the pinhole. There's a marvelous simplicity. It takes no high technology. It doesn't cost any money. It's the ultimate sort of democratic picture-making tool. And so that has a real appeal. And especially in the 1970s, which was kind of the era of a do-it-yourself aesthetic or a countercultural alternative processes sort of era. In that sense, the pinhole made a ton of sense. But again, it's interesting that Ruth was really, to my knowledge at least, the only person in that period to pursue it so seriously and so consistently. So, you know, somehow the vision of the pinhole just registered completely with her sensibility, for whatever kind of mysterious reason.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Laura Spencer, and our guest is Keith Davis, Senior Curator of Photography at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. We're discussing photography and photographer Ruth Thorne Thompson. There's a new exhibition of her photographs that's now open at the museum. Have you used a pinhole camera or created your own? What are the challenges and joys of using this kind of camera? You can join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. The title of the exhibition is Invented Worlds. And could you talk about how she viewed photography as this means of invention?
Well, yeah, I think the title has some real relationship to her artistic sensibility. She chose the pinhole camera in part because it doesn't operate in a normal documentary manner. In other words, when we look at a pinhole photograph, there's no real confusing of it with a pure factual recording of this is our house, this is, you know, my sister, this is a tree, and so forth. The pinhole image is inherently strange and different than images that we encounter in a factual sort of manner. So it was the mythic and kind of mysterious nature of the image itself that intrigued her, and the fact that it really transforms the visual world. Even the simplest pinhole image gives us a vision of what's in front of us that is not expected, that's somehow really significantly different than what we might expect. And it allows for all kinds of wonderful manipulation. She created things in front of, to be recorded in front of the camera, so that she created her own sort of landscapes to be rendered, you know, with the pinhole. And then also inserted objects to be recorded with whatever was real in back of you know, the scene she was recording. So every one of her pictures is a kind of visual invention, a kind of poetic invention, and that theme runs very consistently throughout the body of work.
I wanted to move to a few of the images in the exhibition. There's her 1979 work called Head with Ladders. There's a large head in profile in the foreground of a landscape, and two ladders are propped near the top of the head and the cheek. And could you talk a little bit about that work?
Well, that is a very characteristic piece. On one level, it confuses us in terms of what's real and what's not. Is that really this giant archaeological head that we're seeing in that landscape? And the answer, well, visually speaking, the answer is a little ambiguous. We're not exactly sure. In reality, she has taken a small cutout of a historical artifact, and her cutout may be 3 or 4 inches tall, something like that. And she's very carefully placed it in the landscape on the ground in front of her pinhole camera. So it is recorded along with what's in back of that in terms of the real physical landscape. So she's created this combination that is real only, essentially, only to the pinhole imaging, you know, device. Her first series was called Expeditions, and from the beginning, she's been fascinated by this notion of an expedition or a quest or a journey or a process of discovery. And many of her early pictures pay homage to the early history of photography, the great photographers that, for example, photographed in Egypt in the 1850s, Francis Frith and Maxime Ducamp and others. So she's paying homage to that notion of photographic history, but also to this larger human idea of discovering wonderful, exotic, grand, unexpected sorts of, you know, aspects of the world.
We talked about her interest in kind of the mythic journey. I know that in some of her works, too, she's water is a big element. There was one series where she incorporated miniature props like rocks or ships with a series of seascapes. And could you talk a little bit about those?
Yep, that's true. Another very consistent theme is this idea of water, as you've said, especially the ocean, the grandeur of the ocean, the sense of infinity, where we look out to the horizon, we have no idea how much further that great body of water goes. Even in her early pictures, there the ocean or bodies of water play a role. But you're right that there's a couple series from later in the 80s and even into the 90s where they're explicitly about surfaces of water and great expanses of water, both as a kind of soothing, recuperative sort of notion, but also as very explicitly a kind of sublime idea of something that's nearly endless and much bigger than we are, the human presence on the face of the earth is.
Well, and I know she has at one point described her photographs as environmental collage, and you talked about her incorporating these miniature props. But I wonder if maybe we had a question from a caller a little bit more about the mechanics of the pinhole camera. I wonder, in terms of film, how does it work? If very simple materials, but then how does it work with the film with the camera?
Well, it's really very simple. I mean, opposite the pinhole, you have to cover and then expose for a certain duration of time. If you put a sheet of film in your pinhole camera, then your exposure is going to be very short, because film is very quick, I mean, very light sensitive. If you put a piece of photographic paper, then you'll have a much longer exposure, typically minutes long, in which case, you simply open up the pinhole and look at your watch and count off whatever time you've decided is correct, a minute, 2 minutes, and then cover the pinhole back up and then carry the camera back to your darkroom where you process that piece of paper. But either film or paper is completely usable. And again, it's the same idea as a camera, just ultra-low tech.
I've also heard Ruth Thorne Thompson compared to the Surrealists. And when you hear of collage or kind of these – and is that something that you could see in some of her works in the exhibition?
Yeah, that influence is definitely there. She has been influenced by the 20th century Surrealists, also by sort of old master 16th, 17th painting, Italian painting, portraiture, that sort of thing. So she's very informed on the history of art. But a lot of her works do have a surrealistic element to them, because time is sort of stretched out, space is made elastic. It's not quite like a Salvador Dali melting watch. But there's something of that in her imagery where space is sort of twisted and reshaped in curious ways. And as I said, time is stretched out with these very long exposures. So again, it's a mode of vision that doesn't completely match up to how we're used to seeing the world. And she deliberately pushes that, plays with that. She's very interested in the idea of classicism, classical sculptures or statues and so forth. And uses them often in fragmentary form, you know, a fragment of a head or something like that in the landscape. So there are definitely points of contact with sort of classical 20th century surrealism in some of what she does, yeah.
Our guest is the Nelson Senior Curator of Photography, Keith Davis. Have you worked with a pinhole camera before? Share with us what makes it a joy to use and what are the greatest challenges you've faced with this artistic tool. You can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or share your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter. Our handle is KCURCST. At one point in her career, she began to increase the scale she was using from 4 by 5 inches to 4 by 5 feet. And how did that change her work?
Well, she had worked in this, her standard pinhole mode for about 15 years probably. And like any artist, she was a little restless and wanted just to see what other options were out there. And she actually made a fairly significant break in the late 90s to do a series called Messengers. And we have one of these on the wall, where she reverted to a normal, quote-unquote, normal 35-millimeter camera, made exposures of the faces of classical statues in southern France and in Italy. But she made them at a low shutter speed, and she moved the camera to deliberately blur those faces. She then made prints from those blurred negatives that, approach 4 by 5 feet in size. So that they're very different in subject matter and in scale from the work that she'd established her reputation with. But I think it's a terrific series. As I said, we have one really great piece from that series on view in the show. But it's still about this notion of transformation, of looking at something physical, but in a sense kind of dematerializing it, turning it from something physical into something conceptual, turning from it from a fact into an idea. So in that sense, the Messenger series, definitely has a clear link to her larger body of pinhole work. In the 90s and early 2000s, she continued with the pinhole approach, but did experiment with making prints that were, up to about 20 by 24 or on that kind of scale and size. And they have a very different impact. I like them a lot, but they function more like sort of traditional pictures that we're used to looking at, whereas the early work, those early prints have this wonderful kind of intimacy. They force us to come up to them. If we stand 6 or 8 feet away, we're just not going to see what's in the picture. So those wonderful early small prints have this intimacy that sort of forces us to engage with them, to move up, to be part of their space. Which I think is a very interesting kind of idea.
So is that your hope as a curator, that people will be spending a lot of time with these pictures, getting up close to see the details?
Oh, absolutely. The way we installed the show is in a sense kind of minimal, but we want to emphasize the variety of approaches that Ruth came up with. She really has an incredibly inventive mind. And again, using something as simple as the pinhole camera to realize the variety of ways that she's use that vision to, again, make pictures that are entirely her own is very inspiring and terrifically interesting. So, obviously we want people to spend a lot of time. There's only 40 pictures on view, so it's not like anyone's going to get exhausted, going through the show. But I do think that it represents a really terrific cross-section of her achievement. And most folks haven't seen this work either at all, or they haven't seen it for 20 years or so. So I think it'll be a surprise for a lot of viewers. I think students will be surprised. I think general viewers will not have seen this kind of work before. So I really think and hope that they'll find it terrifically interesting.
Well, I'd read that it was in 2012 that she donated 74 prints to the museum. Was that the inspiration behind the exhibition?
Yes. We had acquired for the Hallmark Photographic Collection a number of her prints back in the early 80s. So I'd known of her work and admired it for years and years and years. But she very generously gave us that wonderful group of pictures just last year. And to honor that generosity and to celebrate what she did, we scheduled this exhibition. I think the timing is terrific, both to celebrate her wonderful gift and to present work that, again, honestly, a lot of folks haven't seen.
Well, in terms of pieces that people won't be able to see, you said about 40 works are on exhibition right now. Are there certain works that you really wanted to put on display but you're hoping to down the road?
Sure. It was tough to come up with that selection because the work has a marvelous kind of consistency to it. But I do think that this selection will give people a really good handle on what her vision is about. And it's good that they know that our collection is even deeper than what's on view. So visitors or researchers that want to see more work, we're happy to do that.
We have a question from Greg, who writes to us in an email. He says, this reminder about pinhole cameras is intriguing, but a lot of us no longer have darkroom access. It makes me wonder if digital pinhole cameras are possible, and a quick web search turned up quite a few ideas. He asks if you have experience or recommendations on working with digital pinhole cameras.
Very interesting question. I don't. I mean, the funny thing is that the pinhole technology is the simplest imaginable. And as soon as you start talking digital component, it doesn't get so simple anymore. The magic of the traditional pinhole camera is that it costs nothing to make. It's a darn good question. It's certainly possible, but to rig up a sensor in the back of a 50-cent oatmeal box, you know, it's a weird idea. it's a strange idea.
Well, hopefully someone will explore that. It's,
yes.
It's interesting, though, because I was kind of curious. I have friends who take a lot of photography, and it seems like there's so many apps out there now that create a quality of a different kind of camera or a different lens, but it's with your phone. And I don't know if that's something that you've explored.
I don't know. I would not be surprised if there is a pinhole app out there. I haven't used it myself. It is true that there aren't that many wet darkrooms left, but I would remind viewers that all the traditional materials are available. Photographic papers are out there, films and so forth. They're not available in as many outlets, but they are still being made, and the products are terrific in quality. So if anyone wants to try these old analog processes, there's nothing holding them back.
I wanted to ask you a little bit. I had read that Ruth Thorne Thompson is now retired and living in Philadelphia. And it's interesting because you don't really hear very often about artists retiring. Mm. And I don't know if you have thoughts about that. It seems like art is a profession that people do for the rest of their lives. And I'm not sure, you know, what was behind that decision.
Well, I would say that Ruth is absolutely still an artist, a full-time artist, but the nature of her expression has changed to gardening, to, good food, to a kind of experiencing of each day as it comes and an appreciation of this sort of larger realm of experience, which ultimately I think is what much art is about anyway. It's about appreciating the nuances of things close to us that many people pass by or don't pay attention to. So she's not that actively making art anymore, but I would say absolutely she's living an aesthetic life, for sure.
Well, you have had a long career in photography, and you've curated nearly 100 exhibitions. And I'm just wondering if there was something different about curating this exhibit, or is it kind of a new process each time?
It is something of a new process each time. I do feel I have a wonderful kind of emotion about this show because, as I said, I did follow Ruth's work in the late 70s, acquired pictures in the early 80s. I loved it at that time. I was aware that she had sort of pulled back a bit from the art world, you know, over the decades. But knowing her and knowing her kind of aesthetic integrity, her commitment to this notion of, as I said, kind of living an artistic life, an aesthetic life, I personally am very pleased that we can give this body of work, the majority of which is now 25 or 30 years old, kind of a new life or introduce it to a new audience, because it is terrific stuff. And many of us were aware of that 30 years ago, but the current generation of viewers, you know, many of them just don't know her name and haven't seen these pictures. And I think they'll really like them, and this work really deserves to be known.
Well, in the exhibition, is there a certain work that you take people to, if you're walking them through, that you take them to that piece first? Is there one that really is your kind of jewel in the exhibition or anything like that?
Well, we tried to lay it out to be both poetically logical but also to lead viewers through, you know, some of the major themes that she's dealt with. The first picture, the very first print in the show was one of the ones that I bought back in the early 1980s. So obviously I felt very strong about it and still do. But and that one is the head with the ladders image. No, I love the range of the work. I love her, the variety of ways she's used this vision to create pictures that are completely her, you know, the completely her own. And again, it's just a wonderful kind of poetic thing to use the very simplest of imaging tools to make a body of work that's really rich and mythic and mysterious and fun and challenging all at the same time. It proves that it's the software between the ears and not the hardware that anyone uses. You know, that's what's the important thing.
The exhibition we're discussing is called Invented Worlds, Photographs by Ruth Thorne Thompson. It continues through July 28th in the Block Building at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. Our guest today is Keith Davis, the museum's senior curator of photography. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll talk about the True False Film Festival. It's an internationally acclaimed documentary film festival in Columbia, Missouri, and this year marks the 10th anniversary. Central Standard will be back in just a moment.